Chuck again is one of our Inner Circle members, and in the same situation, we're all working feverishly over the next 2.5 months to implement, you know, 3 or 4 of the top, you know, highly productive activities, highly productive systems that we sort of help cooperatively develop in the Inner Circle meeting. And,
since I wasn't there, let me ask Chuck, right?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. correct.
Chuck, what were 3 or 4 things that were worth the time, effort, and money to be involved with that? What were your takeaways? Why would you, for somebody who doesn't understand what these things are all about, how would you explain to them the value?
Well, one thing, the first and most important, is you're going to be whatever you surround yourself with. As far as the people you surround yourself with, I think that the Inner Circle group is an excellent group. I think I've made a whole new group of friends that are very knowledgeable in the industry. And to be able to share that information and to be able to put on a table what the problems, for instance, I have, and to be able to have feedback from everybody in the group on what I need to do, on how I can improve, or what I can do to change, that's very valuable. The third thing would be the implementation of what we covered, what I need to work on. I've been to many, many, many seminars and conferences, and I tell you, this meeting was the best out of all of them as far as
Fantastic.
The group
Fantastic.
Effort of helping each other. And I can see me implementing things a little bit more direct than from this meeting than what I would see from any of the other ones I've been to.
That's great. I think what you'll find, and correct me if this misstates something, but I personally have done things like this pretty much continuously since the early 80s. And two things you'll find. One is, if you go into a meeting feeling pretty good about where you're at and what your results are, you always leave the meeting, frankly, enthusiastic and frustrated. And those are both good emotions, because enthusiastic about opportunity and, frankly, frustrated at the fact that you're not moving fast enough. Is that a good way to describe it?
Exactly. And one of the things I took from Tony Robbins and whoever else I heard it from was Kanai, constant,
exactly.
never-ending improvement. And walking away from there, I feel like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
I've got a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. But now also a support team. I know in the in the late 80s and early 90s, one of the teams I was involved with was at EFC Board of Directors, which, you know, out of it grew myself, Steve LaValle, Tim and Dave Kovar, Keith Hafterm, and go through a list of some of the top schools in the country, well, and Greg Silva and Jim Mather. You can go through some of the top people in the country, and they all came out of having that mastermind effect. And a lot of it was picking up best practices from each person, also having them go to work on solving each other's problems, and frankly, also being embarrassed by the idea of going back to the other meeting and not having done what you said you were going to do. So it gave you an extra step of accountability with a whole bunch of other people who are going to hold your feet to the flames. And of course, that's what we hope to replicate with Peak Performers as well. Excellent. Well, Toby. It was great for me to hear that feedback. Of course, I wasn't there at that meeting, but it's always good to hear how results are coming with these things.
Absolutely, and me too. And you know, I think it was hugely valuable for people to understand that. This was very specific implementation information. This wasn't esoteric. This wasn't academic theory. This was exactly how XYZ is working in Baltimore, in Woodbridge, in Florida, in California, in Texas, in Michigan, right? So this wasn't, you know, one way indirect communication where you kind of have to decode it. This was, you know, this is how you implement the system, and this is how you're really going to make a big impact on financial results and on student quality results. And I think everybody walked out of the room with the same focus. So I'm really happy to hear that myself. Again, let me kind of Chuck, thank you so much for the feedback, and Al as well. Let me go ahead and mute everybody here for just a second.
Very, very.
Take care of that. Okay,
yeah,
I think I've got that.
And as you've done that, maybe to conclude on that conversation is I know both of these guys have been in the industry forever. I think I met Al Bartolinsky 20-some years ago. And so this is something now that it's not about, at the inner circle level anyway, teaching the basics. It's about growing a business and growing a career and growing a lifestyle to a new level and having mutual support from each other to do that. So, I mean, it's very, 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 very useful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly not how do I teach intro one. It's what am I going to do to, you know, to add another 5% to the ratio, you know, of that conversion rate so that, you know, it turns into 100% profit, you know, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Let's shift on to our topic of today. And Mr. Milroy, as you know, our topic today is time management. And we're going to be specifically addressing time management from the standpoint of a single school operation. And if somebody on the call is a multi-school operator, the value is now how to apply this to staff members and how to teach staff members to think about time management in a school environment. And so, Toby, as we get started here, let's a lot of the people who are going to be listening to this have heard a lot of the Lee Meltzer material on time management. Perhaps they've heard some of the Dan Kennedy material. And I want to now bring this in from whether it's Steve Covey or Dan Kennedy or Lee Meltzer or many of the other people into a transitioning into practical where the rubber meets the road, how you specifically deal with time management issues as they apply to a martial arts school. And I think that's a very useful thing to do. And what you see a lot of times with these time management programs is they're mostly focused oftentimes on you're in an office and you're working on a computer, or maybe you're working with other people in an office, and they don't really deal with the kind of retail school environment that we all find ourselves in. And of course, there are an awful lot of differences and challenges that come with our environment as far as keeping focused and staying on task. Does that make sense to me?
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that probably makes the most sense as the first jumping off point is a lot of school owners feel that it's their responsibility to sort of be at the beck and call of the customer and to feel like they should always be accessible to the parent that has a question or the student who has a question. And I thought that was probably useful for us to get started off. If you could sort of frame us. Obviously, you coming from a big multi-school background, you have to have how the individual unit operator manages their time down to a science because you have to replicate it all across the country.
Right.
So I thought you brought a great perspective to that. So what would you say if I'm a single school operator, what should my thinking be about always being accessible to a customer, always being accessible to a parent? How should I frame the time?
Well, let's start by maybe giving some definitions here. Is I always think of one way to think about time management for a single school operator is divide your day into two pieces. And piece number one is from the minute you get out of bed until you get flooded with students and parents and a whole bunch of people during school operations hours. So I'm going to say that's depends on how early you rise, but you know, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And so those are times when you don't have students, you don't have families, you don't have parents, presumably all clamoring for your attention. And if you have some day classes, you've got to factor that in. And then you have the prime times, which are 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. until, let's say, 8 or 9 p.m. And the way you think about those two time periods, I think, have to be very different. So you have non-prime time, times when you can't get hold of most people by phone at home and times when you don't have most students in for class, is time for planning, is time for administrative activity, it's time for most of your marketing and outside promotional activity. And then you have prime time, which is 3 to 8 or 9, where you really have to be focused on student results. And now, Toby, you ask a question, which is how accessible do you need to be to students? And the idea, of course, is you have to appear to be infinitely accessible. And in fact, you have to be very careful to manage that access from a standpoint of two things. One, for them to see value in your time, and two is to really focus on what your results activities are. So in prime time, it doesn't matter whether this is for an instructor or a program director or a school owner or a branch manager, however you define those roles, there's really only three things that are happening in prime time. You're focusing on enrollments, you're focusing on renewals, and you're focusing on retention. So you've got to be careful in prime time that any activity you do is either helping improve your retention, creating renewals, or improving your enrollments. And so once you get that broad brush stroke down, now you've got to go about managing that time and effort in the most productive way possible. Now what I find is let's say you have a class of 20 students come in and you have a head instructor on the floor. So you're now the program director, you're the branch manager. What we all want to do is we want to think that when Mrs. Jones taps us on the shoulder and says, "Do you have a minute?" that the right answer should be a big smile on your face and you say, "Of course I have time for you anytime you need it, Mrs. Jones. Come on in the office." Well, the problem with that approach is that your students are on their off time. And we all want to be friends of our students. We all want to be friends of the parents. But the reality is you can chew up an awful lot of time during your day talking about the divorce and talking about what the neighbor did and talking about the problem with the cat and talking about a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't help you with enrollments, renewals, or retention. So you've got to be very careful about that. One of the things, and this is probably the most controversial thing I'll say today, although, as you know, Toby, I do tend to say a few controversial things. But what I've always taught all of our staff to say is that their answer to Mrs. Jones is, she says, "Do you have a minute?" The answer is always no. Now, that rubs most people the wrong way, but there's a tag on to that. The answer is, no, I'm in the middle of about seven things. However, what is it you need? Or how is it that I can help you? So see, what you've just done is you said, "No, I don't have any free time right now, but you know, what is it you need help with?" Now, whatever comes out of her mouth is going to tell you if it's the best use of your time right now on enrollments, renewals, or retention, or if it's something that can be scheduled for some other time. And again, you never know what they're looking for. I know the last time I was in a school running it, we had the 20 top AAA students who, if you let them do it, would monopolize your time, and they could chew up 5 hours of your time just because they liked hanging around. But if she says, "I want to talk to you about leadership right now," well, that may be the best use of your time. If she says, "We have the Boy Scout troop who wants to come in and take a class from you, can we schedule that with you?" Well, that might be the best use of your time right now. However, if she says, "Well, I really wanted to talk to you about Joey's grades and some problems we have with the teacher, and I wanted to go over all that stuff with you." Now, if you don't have anything else that's more important immediately, maybe the best use of your time. In many cases, you can now schedule an appointment. And you can say, "Well, Mrs. Jones, I have five people I have to talk to right now. That's very important to me. I want to make sure we address that. Is it possible that we could schedule a time after 8 p.m. this evening, or that we could schedule a time, let me look at the calendar, tomorrow afternoon to sit down and go through that thoroughly when there's 2,800 distractions?" And see, most parents will appreciate the fact that you're going to take time when there's not a bunch of other distractions to talk to them, and at the same time, it keeps you from sitting in the office for 45 minutes while the renewal walks out the door. And again, one way to think about your time, especially in prime time, and again, to give credit where it's due, I stole this from Steve Covey. He talks about the time management quadrant, mm-hmm. and he puts everything in four quadrants. It's either urgent and important, it's not urgent and important, it's not urgent and important. Well, I think I just said that one. It's not urgent and not important, or urgent and not important. And it's very easy for the evening, and again, we're still talking about prime time, it's easy for the evening to get chewed up with urgent and not important activities. So you've got to be very careful to not let the not urgent, not important stuff chew up your time. The other thing is the difference between a $10,000 a month school and a $50,000 a month school is mostly focusing on the not urgent but important activities. In other words, I can't tell you how many times I talk to people who say, "Well, I have these 30 renewal prospects. didn't get around to talking to them this month, but they'll still be there next month. We're going to do it next month. Well, see, and what they miss is that every week that goes by, past when they're ready, when they're ripe, that you take action on it, the less likely they are to do it, and the more difficult they are. So by very fact of like not getting around to the not urgent but important stuff, you diminish your results dramatically. And it's very easy to do that. Again, very few school owners, if somebody walks in while I'm there and says, I want to enroll in class, and they schedule an appointment for them, few school owners are not going to take the intro and do the enrollment conference and do the enrollment. It's very hard to do that because they you know, put themselves in front of you. However, the same student now who's in class and they're 6 weeks into it and they're thrilled and they're excited and mom is hot for the deal and dad is hot for the deal and the kid is excited and they all want to be in black belt, you let that go for a month and you never know what happens next. So an awful lot of the difference, the critical edge between a low-performing school and a high-performing school is focusing on those not urgent but highly important activities, and again, getting rid of all those unimportant activities, whether they're urgent or not urgent. And again, it's very easy for a student to walk in, or a parent of a student to walk in, or frankly, you know, I mean, the worst case I've ever seen is I walked into a school one time and they were talking to the VALPAC rep at, you know, 6 o'clock in the afternoon or 5 o'clock in the afternoon while there are 5 renewals on the floor. Well, I mean, that's, maybe it's important, but it could be scheduled at 11 o'clock in the morning rather than scheduled at 5 o'clock when you have business to be done. I learned that lesson years ago, Toby. I was working my way through college originally before I started working for Junery and going to Georgetown. Is I was working for a food brokerage. And see, all of the grocery stores understand that they have peak periods of time, and as a food broker, you weren't allowed to go in when all the customers are there. You're only allowed to go in before the customers were there. So they had on the back door of the place, reps and brokers and salesmen are only allowed from this time to this time. Restaurants do the same thing. But oftentimes when we're running a school, we don't get it. And all of a sudden we let other people infringe upon our time when we have students there.
Absolutely. You know, maybe let's take a half a step back and try to kind of define some things for, again, we're focusing on, a single school operator and their full-time staff. What are the primary roles in a single school operation that I should be focused on if I'm an owner or if I'm the proprietor of the location? What are the main categories the main roles I need to fulfill in the school?
Well, yeah, I mean that's a really good question, and the thing that we haven't addressed at all so far is how does an instructor, somebody who is let's say tied to the floor for 25 hours or 30 hours a week, how do they manage their time, right?
Yeah.
But let's say that in a school you have one role is somebody who needs to enroll students and do the renewals. You have somebody else who needs to basically teach the classes. And obviously you can have a format where the person who is the head instructor also closes most of the sales, although sometimes that's a difficult format to have. So I'm going to say that you need a program director and you need a head instructor. Now, I've seen this work very well where the head instructor is essentially the branch manager. So they're the person who, and if you're an owner-operator, that's the way it usually is, right? A lot of owner-operators are also more or less put themselves in the role of head instructor. Now, we're going to talk about why that is, because usually they're a martial arts enthusiast who doesn't want to get involved with the dirty business of selling. And so usually they take the wrong role for themselves. But at the very least, you're going to need somebody who teaches all the classes. You need somebody to be a program director, in other words, who does enrollment conferences and who does the renewal conferences and closes the sales. And clearly, you need the phones answered. Now, depending upon the volume of the school, there can be a receptionist at the front who answers the phones, perhaps is trained adequately to do info calls, confirmation calls, follow-up with students to greet people at the front. Or there can be a situation where it's a lower volume school and the same person who's the program director is also answering the phones and greeting people at the front door.
Yeah, and obviously the key you said there is depending on the volume of the school. So the primary roles are number one, the chief instructor, number two, the program director, and mostly that fits the mold if a school is, what would you say, 125 students and above, 100 students and above, something like that?
Well, I think the difficulty with saying it that way is that it's about aspiration. It's not about where the school is now.
Right.
So if I'm a, let's say I'm a guy who works a full-time job somewhere else, and I go in and I run the school for 5 hours a day, and I basically do everything with a couple of volunteers because there's not enough gross. And if I'm happy with that, that's all I want. I don't want to make a living running the school. I just want to teach as much as possible, and if things are really sloppy around the edges, it's not a problem. Well, that can be a one-man operation. Now, if my aspiration is to make a full-time living from the school, to have a strong student base, and to have a lot of successful students as well as a real business set up, that really is very rarely a one-man operation. And so that really has to be, again, depending upon that aspiration, really has to be a two full-time people operation, and it's a problematic cart before the horse for some people, because they'll say, well, I'm only grossing X amount of money. I can't afford to hire somebody else. Well, and of course, the problem is you're never going to get to X plus Y. You're never going to get to that threshold without having adequate support. And so really is any school that's going to be really a full-time, full-blown operation, I believe, needs two full-time people there during all the prime-time hours. Now, that could be one 20-hour-a-week person who's pretty solid and you're full-time, but you really need, anytime there's a class going on, you need somebody else there who's not a volunteer parent or not a 15-year-old who's able to focus on the other operations of the school.
Absolutely. So let's break that down into some component parts again. So now if I'm the program director, if I'm, you know, the number one guy and I'm responsible for enrollments and renewals and other program director type stuff, what are the specific challenges on my time and how do I best manage those activities?
Well, yeah, and that's a good focus, because as head instructor, and again, this is the reason why I think a lot of school owners who are trying to grow initially shoot themselves in the foot. Because what they want to do is they want to hire somebody to be the salesman, quote unquote, and they want to be the head instructor on the floor. And see, in most cases, I think they'd be better off and probably have a better resource for hiring a good instructor that can be, and again, let's say that you have classes are an hour. You know, in our cases, they're 45 minutes or an hour. But let's say your classes are an hour. If you're the owner operator and you can be a presence on the floor for 10 minutes out of the hour, you can really control the tone and you can control the quality of that class if you have a good black belt instructor there who's working with you. And so now you can have a situation where as the owner operator, you can do the enrollment conferences. You can do the renewal conferences. You can take care of most of the parents' issues. And you can also end up with a receptionist who's answering the phone and greeting people at the front door and have a structure that works for you. Now, if you do it the other way, you try to remain the head instructor, but you turn over all of the responsibility for generating the income of the school to an employee, is oftentimes that's problematic. And it's problematic for two reasons. One is the owner operator is going to be thinking about the way the world works differently than an employee, but it's also problematic because typically school owners underhire. So they hire somebody who's more or less a volunteer mom or something like that, or they hire somebody who's a 22-year-old black belt with vertical sidekicks to be the one that's interacting with people about their money, and it doesn't work very well. But going back to your question, Toby, so if I'm a program director, what I've got to focus on, obviously, is a fairly short list of things. During prime time, I need to be calling to confirm all of my intros. So I need to be making sure that anybody who's scheduled for a first intro, anybody who's scheduled for a second intro, or frankly anybody who has stood me up for one of those gets called. I need to be making sure that anybody who comes in for an intro gets greeted, and in some cases, that's the same person who's teaching those classes. I need to make sure that they're getting prepped for the enrollment, and some schools do very well at a one intro enrollment. I prefer a two intro enrollment. But if they're doing a one intro enrollment, they've got to make sure that they're prepped on the phone, they've got to make sure they're prepped when they're there, and then they've got to make sure that the actual enrollment process is followed through with a high percentage closure. The other thing they've got to be doing is they've got to be overseeing the renewal prep process. So they've got to make sure that new students, you know, are introduced to the school smoothly, make sure that they're handheld through the beginning stages, make sure that if it's a child, the parents are handheld through the beginning stages so they don't have any gaps in their progress, and then they've got to introduce the renewal process to them, do the preliminary conferences, and close the renewals. So I would say the program director, that's 90% of their role. Their other role is to be the person who can see the forest for the trees during class. So one of the roles I see for the program director is, let's say there's a class of 40 students and everything is going along straight well, and the head instructor's on the floor and he's got that under control. There still needs to be somebody who stands back and sees the frown on Mrs. Jones' face, sees the child on the side who's getting lost in the shuffle, sees the adult who's getting frustrated, or sees the four kids who need a strike today, or the three adults who need to be prepped for the test, who can really step back and see what's going on with an objective eye and can tap that instructor on the shoulder and probably give them a clipboard and say, here's three things you need to focus on right now, so that those pieces don't get missed. Because again, you know, in the school, there's always a lot of little things through the fringes that if you're not careful, a head instructor can have a lot of energy on the floor, but retention doesn't spring out of energy and excitement. It springs out of nobody getting lost in the shuffle, and it springs out of that low of a rapport you have with students. Anything to add to that, Toby?
No, I think that's absolutely right. It's from a focus perspective, it's like not being able to see the forest for the trees. I mean, it's very easy to be, you know, elbow deep in teaching a class and not realize that little Johnny's been over in the corner all by himself for 10 minutes. And, of course, everybody but you sees it, you know, and it's very easy to let that happen, even with very, you know, highly trained instructors. It happens a lot, especially when they're very good instructors, because when they're very, very skilled instructors, they're not only thinking about, you know, the lesson of the day in the chamber on the sidekick, but they're thinking about prepping for the renewal and highlighting a student and all of these other things that they're thinking about, and it's very easy for things like that to be missed. So it's important to have an objective eye. Can you maybe talk a little bit about, it's a pretty important topic, if I'm a program director, obviously my focus has to be on enrollments and renewals and sort of managing the activity that's happening on the class to see that things aren't being missed. If I'm a program director, I've seen this happen over and over and over again. It's very easy for parents to access them more readily than an instructor. You know, there's not that invisible barrier where, you know, parents aren't really stepping on the floor to go and talk to the instructor very often. But very often you can have Mrs. Jones, who's, you know, good-hearted and willing to help and cooperative and very nice parent, one of the AA parents, that just, you know, kind of hangs out at the desk and just kind of distracts you from handling the phone calls you need to handle and do that sort of thing. What sort of technique is it that or strategy is it that you think is the most effective in handling that and sort of recontrolling your own time again?
Well, again, the first thing, and it sounds simplistic, is the busier you look, the less people want to interrupt you for trivia.
Absolutely.
So if you don't look like you're on a mission, and frankly, if you're not on a mission, you're probably not doing your job very well. So if you just kind of look like you're hanging out and like you have nothing better to do, people kind of want to come over and just kind of tell you about how their day went. However, if you look like you're busy, if you look like you're in the middle of three things, then they don't interrupt you as much. The second thing is, and you know, I've always had three or four rules of thumb. One is the one that I just mentioned a minute ago, which is, do you have a minute? The answer is always no. But then the follow-up is, what is it specifically that you need? And then the follow-up would be, schedule an appointment on off hours deal with it right then if it was the highest, best use of my time, or schedule an appointment even for 20 or 30 minutes later in the same class. So, you know, that would be, Mrs. Jones, that is very important. I have about three people I need to talk to. Joey's going to be in class until 7. Would it be okay if we get together at 6:50 and talk about that? And again, being very specific, that way I'm not blowing her off, but I am scheduling a very specific time so she doesn't feel like she got ignored for 50 minutes. But at the same time, and you know, maybe she goes and runs a shopping errand or something, but comes back and talks to me about that. The second rule of thumb I always had was never let anybody who wasn't ready to give me money ever go sit in the office during prime time. Now, that sounds a little harsh too, but you know, I don't want to have the mom go sit in the office when I have 5 or 6 other things that going on so that she can tell me about the problem they're having at school today. That's something that I can do at off hours, or that's something that I can do at a pre-scheduled appointment. It's something that's important, but it's not urgent, so I don't need to deal with it right then and there. So, and again, my AAA rated parent who wants to come in and have a conversation with me, you know, if I don't let them go sit in the office, I remember it's kind of funny, last time I was running to school, I had 10 or 12 that were just love spending time with you. And I had one who would always walk in and go sit in the office, and I just let her sit in the office because I'd go do a whole bunch of other stuff, and then I'd tap her on the shoulder and say, hey, that's somebody I need to talk to, and kick her out. But I knew if I went and sat in the office and she was sitting in the office, you know, he, whoever it was, that I would end up getting sucked into a conversation that wasn't very useful at the time. Now, the same person, I'd schedule an appointment at 10 o'clock the next day to, you know, meet him at Starbucks or talk to him on the phone and accomplish all the rapport building things that they felt they needed, but I wouldn't do it in prime time.
Yeah, and you know, that's a key point too. You said it at least 3 times, but you know, it's really important for everybody to get this. Even though your answer is, no, I don't have a minute this second, that's not the end of the conversation. We're not trying to build up walls so that you're incommunicable or that you're unreachable or anything like that, but it certainly is controlling your time on your schedule and with your perspective of what's most valuable at that minute rather than completely submitting to someone else's perspective of what's most valuable at that minute. And if I'm a relatively small school owner, I may not have had this experience yet. And I remember having this experience. I remember having this experience when I first opened this one location in Florida, and I had a student literally that had dropped out, and today was their last day. And the student was like 5 minutes from walking out the door. And I had done everything humanly possible to save the student. You know, I mean, it was you know, one of these 10-step things to try to save the student, and I had done all that. And if you have a not very busy school, then very rarely is the competition for your time going to be between someone who wants to talk to you and someone you need to talk to because of this financial transaction or there's a membership transaction or there's an urgent and important need to talk to that person. So if I'm not a very busy person, if I'm not at a very busy school, I may not have to